everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
And I'm Dane, the Ernest Hemingway heads, because I hear they get really mad when you use Hemingway's name.
Okay.
Part of that conversation. Anyways, let's do the... We can go back.
Yeah, and then explain the joke, because we always got to explain that joke. Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing. Nope.
Sometimes.
We're off card in a new recording space. Let me try again. Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games, where we discuss our favorite hobbies, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes, but play some games sometimes is in there twice.
I think...
I'm not quite off card
yet. We talk about our favorite hobby and even play some games.
And even play some games sometimes. It's, you know what, we're professionals. And that's what professional podcasting sounds like. playing anything this episode. What are we doing this episode?
We are going to talk about adventure writing, which is why I'm the Ernest Hemingway head.
Okay. But then, I thought, because he was a writer.
I guess you weren't part of that conversation. Anyways, your mom was telling me about, like, Hemingway's, like, bar had to get renamed because, like, the Hemingway estate sued that or sent a cease and desist.
What, you can't use the word Hemingway?
Well, like, apparently you just can't use it for a bar like that or something. I don't know. Maybe they alluded to, like, you know, Ernest Hemingway, actually Ernest Hemingway, not just Hemingway's.
Yeah, Hemingway's.
But that's why it was a joke.
Famously a heavy drinker and fan of bars, I imagine.
But, I know.
Well, whatever.
But you can't call your bar Hemingway's.
Okay. I didn't know that. But we aren't running a bar, we're doing a podcast. And this time, tonight, we're talking about writing RPG adventures. And thoughts that we have about that, and lessons we've learned from doing it or looking at other stuff. And yeah, just ideas. Ideas about it. Because that's a thing we do.
Mm-hmm.
We run adventures, and before you run them, you usually got to write something.
To give a little bit of structure to this episode, I think we should talk about the Fighting Fantasy books, because that's where this idea came from. When we did our kind of review episode about those, we talked a little bit about it and put it on the board to do a future episode. So now we're doing it.
Yeah.
And then we should talk about like modules.
Adventure modules,
and then kind of how we write modules / our adventures for our
structure the adventures that we write.
And of course, we will meander all over the place and not stick to that at all.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Fighting Fantasy books, if you'll remember, are those choose your own adventure books. That
with a bit of a game bolted on. A
little bit of a role-playing game. It's got some mechanics and some dice rolls. But like the way that they are structured, specifically the Death Trap Dungeon one, I thought was kind of interesting. And it did a good job of having this, like, what seems like an extremely big and expansive, like, maze of a dungeon. But only because... You can't ever really turn around, because just that's the way the books are formatted.
Mm-hmm.
There's never a turn around and go the other way option.
There are a couple that I remember where you can go a little bit of the way down a corridor, and it'll tell you a little something, and it'll say, do you want to turn around and go back, or do you want to keep going forward? There are a couple points where, well, the end of every paragraph is like a fork in the road, and sometimes that fork in the road allows you to go back just to the one you were just at, but it's not all structured that way. Most of it doesn't allow you to just go north, east, south, west, from whichever room you're standing in. It doesn't let you do that and then like turn around from the next one and go back. It's not like a grid that you can navigate
through. Yeah, it's more so like a side-scrolling video game where sometimes you're able to go back to the previous screen, but rarely. Which is unlike tabletop role-playing games, right? We talk about that, and like if you're a long-time listener, we harked on that a lot in our early days about how tabletop role-playing games are so great because you're not constricted by what's in the code of like the video game.
Yeah.
With like a invisible wall that's like, oh, you know, you reach the mountain pass in Skyrim and like beyond you lies other Tamriel stuff. But this is Skyrim, so you can't go that way. You just run up against an invisible wall.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, you know, it does seem like the Fighting Fantasy is railroady, right? That's the term for tabletop role-playing games where the game master shoves one specific path down the player's throats.
There's been a lot of like online discussion in recent years about like what is and is not railroady, and like is it railroady for a game master to prepare content and expect you to engage with it? Not necessarily, but the Fighting Fantasy books are, in the strictest sense, a railroad with a few different forks in the track.
Yeah.
It's like your experience is written, and it's because of the nature of how it's delivered. It's delivered in a book. So, you know, you have to read the paragraph that says, this is where you are, this is the description of it, this is what happens, and then, you know, choose this or that, or go this way or this way. So, very railroady.
But I think there's some good points there of having these very important like junctions or crossroads or rooms, if you will, that you have to get through. So like in Death Trap Dungeon, the goal was to make it all the way through the dungeon. And to do that, to actually make it out of the dungeon, you needed like 3 gems.
Mm-hmm.
And those like, you could go past like the room with the gem in it without really knowing it until you get all the way to the end and realize, shit,
like, this is the end sapphire room, but I don't have the you got to get 3 keys basically throughout the course of your time in the dungeon in order to win the dungeon, and anything else at the end of the dungeon isn't actually beating the dungeon, it's a failure state at the very end.
Right, so I think the lesson for writing your adventures from Fighting Fantasy, or one of them at least, is the like key item or key room or, you know, key encounter aspect of it. So like this encounter is going to happen. How it happens, when it happens, what the result of that is, that doesn't need to be on a railroad track. But like, you know, this encounter happens in some shape or form, right? Like, for example, the first confrontation with like the big bad, right? When exactly that happens, where it happens, probably the results should be set in stone. Like, are your players going to defeat the big bad the first time they see them? I mean, probably not. Otherwise, it's not really much of a big bad. But like, introduce the villain. That's a common one, right? And like, you just know that that's going to happen, and so you can plan on that happening. And as a game master, you can force that without being a railroad track at all.
Yeah.
So the other examples could be like, you know, meeting an NPC, right? Big bad, but it could also be a friend. But like making a decision. So like, are we going to get involved in this civil war, or are we not going to get involved in that civil war? When that decision comes up to your players, may not be exactly when you plan, because they'll be like, well, wait a second, before we go on to the guy we're supposed to meet, let's go kill that dragon.
Yeah, let's go talk to that guy or go do that thing.
All right, let's go get sidetracked with some bullshit, in the words of Walton Goggins.
That was a fun way to acknowledge the video game.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that's how Bethesda RPGs are structured. Here's a kind of boring thing, and it's way over there. So on the way, you're going to interact with a bunch of other stuff.
Do you have anything to say about the important points? So, like, you know, in an outline,
right,
you can outline the important points without knowing exactly how your players are going to get there or
that's,
what they're going to do when they get there.
Yeah. It's definitely been my approach before. I thought going through Fighting Fantasy was very instructive. Because it's like, this is not just an adventure module. This is like the whole thing written out. The entire experience written out. So more than just like an on-rails adventure module, it was the entire experience. But we don't typically like to do that to our players, right? We like to give them that... even if they don't really have a choice about some things that you know you want to happen... You know, you want players to feel like they have agency and make choices along the way. And so, yeah, my process typically when I write adventures is to, like, if it was obviously not like a Fighting Fantasy, is to, you know, outline major things that need to happen. Sometimes tying them to specific locations, but sometimes not. You know, it depends, I guess, like if I start with a map or not. If I start with a map, sometimes I put in my notes that, like, this is happening over here, location-based. But otherwise, in just, like, the outline of what I want the adventure to be and what content I want the players to experience, that's usually how I do it, is, like, the major bullets are... people they need to meet or incidents that need to happen. And then on the opposite side of the scale of Fighting Fantasy, where everything in between those moments is written out, sometimes with a couple different branching paths, leave that open, unwritten, so that, you know, players make their own decisions and drive the train in between those points as much as you can, you know, as much as you can allow them to.
Yeah, well, because it's also hard. So, like, talking about adventures, we could have started with this if we, you know, had an outline this time. But there's one-shots, right? One session.
Yeah.
Could be as little as 2 hours. Probably not going to be, because they never are. But, you know, like a very contained thing, right? Mm-hmm. And we've talked, I believe, on this podcast before about, like, a really great one-shot is just a bar fight. You know, like that Enzo, or that RPG Light that Enzo ran forever ago. Like, that's a great
one-shot. I remember talking about that. I remember I wasn't actually part of that session, though, and I heard about it afterwards.
I'm pretty sure we did that in the car.
Did we?
Yeah, it was like one of the very first things we did.
I thought you were telling me how what a good one-shot that was, but I wasn't there for it.
Well, anyways.
Maybe it was something.
It was a long time ago, yeah. So.
Oh, wait, no, I was there. I do remember.
But yeah, like, so like, that's a good setting for a one shot, is it's just a bar fight.
Yeah.
Because it's very contained, mm-hmm. and like, there's no...
And you can zoom super far in.
Yeah.
Like, you get really, really high def, knowing that, like, yeah, this is going to be 1 to 3 hours. But the events of this session are going to take place over the course of like 10 minutes, maybe.
Yeah. So there's one shots. Right. Then there's, on the other end of the spectrum, I guess, are like the long campaigns that aren't really adventures because you go on adventures mm-hmm. in the campaign, where it's like, you guys start in this town and here's a couple hooks and like you get to choose which ones you do. And then, you know, as the game master, I take it session by session and like, here's new stuff each time. And like, okay, so you guys, you know, want to go explore the old dwarven ruins. So we're play up to the ruin yeah. entrance, but I don't have anything yet.
But I don't
so,
like, have...
next time, I'll come back with the dwarven ruins
with cool thing. Stuff about what's going to happen in here. Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's...
I mean, I guess... And this is a type of... the difference between a campaign and an adventure is... I feel like a pretty blurry line.
Right, which is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So, like...
Because what you're kind of talking about is a type of adventure writing, which is like sandbox adventure writing.
Well, yeah.
Or adventure design, I guess. And, yeah, in sandbox, is like, you put stuff there, and you might not know what's behind every door,
mm-hmm.
but everything has a little bit of a lure to it. And also, hopefully, if you're doing a good job, the travel and the exploration between these just question marks on the map is also fun to engage with. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, depending on the structure of it, if you're meeting, you know, once a week or every couple of weeks for a few hours, you only need to plan as far as the next session. So you might not have, you don't need to, and mm-hmm. so you might not have bothered to fill in everything that's behind every door.
And you probably still have a through line through everything, you know, classic in Fate of the World thing where
mm-hmm.
all these little things that the players get involved into all have a common thread, etc. Right? But that's like on the opposite of a one-shot where it's like, I have no idea where this is going to go, and so I never plan that far ahead. Because my players can easily just say, you know what, we go back to the last town. We don't want to go forward anymore. So apparently we have unfinished business in the last town.
Right.
And then you, as the game master, are like, okay, well, I guess I'm winging it. Right. The adventure writing that we're talking about is kind of in between, where it's like a module, right? If you've played Tabletop Spaces before, you probably know what mm-hmm. I'm talking about. If you don't, you know, a module is a booklet that outlines a, I don't know, from anywhere from like 3 to 10 session adventure, right? So there's a semi-contained story. Players can approach it very differently, but there's no like, well, we get into our car and we drive 10 hours across the map and go into a new zone.
Yeah. The module doesn't support that
because mm-hmm.
the new zone is outside of it. What I always, or what I was given to understand from like some YouTube videos and people talking about the way D&D used to be is that like an older structure that maybe a lot of people used to play, but also people argue about it. And there's probably never been one, you know, the same way that people used to play RPGs, but that like modules were something you could drop in. You'd have a, maybe you'd have a map, you know, if you were cool and you liked making maps and you wanted to give that to your players, you'd have some idea of what the world was, or you'd, you know, just use the D&D. This is the, you know, the Forgotten Realms. And modules are things that you can just put
mm-hmm.
on the map somewhere, and when they get there, great, this is what we're doing for a while.
Right, I got a pre-planned book that takes us all the way from beginning of this, you know, Dwarven Ruins complex to the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're talking about, is writing for that.
Yeah,
specifically
the module level thing, as opposed to writing a whole big sandbox or writing a
mm-hmm.
An entire campaign.
Right, because we've had success with the lock-in intensive
mm-hmm.
model, which doesn't necessarily need like a full written out adventure module, but I can imagine that a sandbox intensive lock-in would be hard, yeah, because there's no time to prep in that intensive.
Right.
And so, like, I think I could do it, but I would really fucking hate it. Because, like, I wouldn't take good notes because I'm game mastering.
Right. It's hard as a game master to keep good notes. And if you're developing while you're running and also trying to take notes, that's too many things. And then you'd end up with, like, incongruous stuff that exactly. You're like, why did I say this was here? That doesn't make sense. That, like, how am I going to, you know, you game master yourself into corners, mm-hmm, with, you know, stuff that you wish you hadn't said because you would have put that somewhere else if you'd had a moment to think about it, but you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. So, that now that we know what we're talking about, or now that you know,
yeah,
listeners, you, pointing at you.
You know.
So I think one of the things, and like kind of we're already doing it naturally, like when we tried our hand at like adventure writing in the past, and like some of our more put together adventures like Seabreeze Motel or like Temple of Anubis, those I think we kind of stumbled upon it or hit on it a little bit naturally, but like having the important points that make it a story, that like make it a coherent story,
mm-hmm,
and like have through lines, and like, you know, your decisions matter because, you know, it changes the outcome.
Yeah.
But like those points aren't, oh, first you gotta do these three steps in a specific order and then like, you know, spit out the win condition. 'Cause the win condition can be whatever the players decide it is.
Yeah.
They
can decide, like, our win condition is we want to leave. Mm-hmm. Like, we're too hurt, you know? We're too hurt to continue. We've made a, you know, we've made a risk assessment of this situation and decided that we don't finish it. We run away.
Right. And so, like, even if you had planned for the boss and you have, like, this big epic boss fight that you're like, oh, this is going to be so awesome. And then, like, throughout the dungeon or adventure, stop using dungeon for adventure because those are two different things.
Yeah.
And
a dungeon can be an adventure.
Yeah.
But not every adventure is dungeon.
So throughout the adventure, the players decide that like, actually the big bad is not really that bad, or we don't really give a shit. So like, let's just get out of this situation with our lives.
Mm.
Okay. That's a little bit of a bummer because me as a game master, I planned this epic boss fight, but I can still use aspects of that boss fight to like, you know, keep pushing the players and be like, oh, well, you can't just leave the dungeon. It's locked.
Yeah.
I said dungeon again. God damn it. You can't just leave the adventure. Something's stopping you. Like, if you just try to escape through the mountain pass, the big bad's dragon's going to get you.
Sure.
So, okay, so we got to deal with that. So we got to find a way to sneak past the dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have to be through combat. It can be...
Doesn't have to be fighting the big bad anymore.
Yeah.
Like, they've already decided they're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be killing the dragon or whatever. It just can be... And that's something that, you know, you as a game master ought to be ready to adapt to on the fly. Mm-hmm. It's like, they've, with their agency, done a cool thing and decided that the win condition is actually something different. So give them a different challenge about it.
Right. Have them come up with a plan and be like, okay, here's the deal. It's like the dragon patrols at night and sentries at day. So like... You know, are you going to try for night or are you going to try for day? And then, like, you know, maybe you guys need disguises or a ruse. And then just let the players play.
Yeah. You said something a little bit ago that got me thinking. Well, okay, so we're talking about the lock-in and the success that we found there. And I do think some of the success came from just like us, you know, locking in and saying, this is what we're doing for the whole weekend. We're going to go start to finish on this thing. And, you know, committing to that as opposed to scheduling multiple smaller sessions over the course of multiple weeks. A lot of success came from that. But on my side, the adventure writing side, I think a lot of success came from scope and boundaries. And, you know, you talked the joke about, like, hitting the invisible wall in a Fallout game or whatever. Mm-hmm. That never came up. Like, it was always an option. I gave the players a map, and you could have been like, well, what if we go west past this last, you know, square of the map? What's over there? But it didn't come up because everyone was a good sport and had made characters who were interested in dealing with what was going on in that forest. I didn't really have a plan for that. It was kind of just like the tacit agreement between all participants was that we were going to engage with the material as I presented it and not say, you know, like, what if we leave and go do something else? Well, I didn't prepare anything else. Mm-hmm. But also what I did prepare, like, it had those boundaries. It was a physically bounded space where I was like, this is where all the adventure is. It's inside this place. And starting, I guess, with that, like drawing a box around when you're coming up with an adventure and you're going to sit down and start writing something that you're excited to run for your players. I think drawing a little box around it so that you know when something is outside of it, just like make a note of that for later. Maybe that's a whole nother thing, but try to keep your effort focused on what is inside that box, right? Draw a box around it, decide what is pertinent to it, and then only design that stuff.
Well, yeah, and I think doing that creates the box, and then when you have the box in like the session zero and coming up with characters, you can guide your players and be like, I know what the box is.
Yeah.
And help your characters fit inside that box, right?
But when someone starts coming up with a cool character idea, but you're like, that's not going to work because that guy is going to want to do something else.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you just like, yeah, I have an adventure planned. Here's the rule book. Show up, you know, next Saturday with a character and we're rip. Mm-hmm. And you get like the most glup shitto ever. And you're like, okay, well, this guy has no business being in the adventure. Mm-hmm. So now either I have to, as a game master, do a bunch of edits and like loops or, you know, jump through a lot of hoops, or that player is not going to have very much fun because they're like, well, none of this applies to my character. My character would just kind of want to leave. And it's like, well,
well, that sucks.
That sucks that you made that character.
Right.
Right. So if you have it written out, if you have the box, mm-hmm. you can avoid that or take steps to avoid it. Right. And then, you know, if you look back on the board, part of the success of the lock-in is the actual locking in, metaphorically speaking, of the players being like, this is what we're doing and I want to do it and I'm not going to be a turd about it and be like, well, what if we went off the map?
Right.
Because there's a bunch of fun stuff on the map. There's no need to do that.
Yeah. And that kind of departs what we're talking about in terms of like adventure writing. That is like the session zero stuff, the compact, the social contract between participants in this hobby is that, like, yeah, it could, you know, I could take my spaceship and go anywhere else, but you shouldn't want to if, you know, If the premise has been presented and then characters are made for that. Mm-hmm. I forget what you said earlier, but I just remembered something else that I meant to say about it. I think, well, let me muddle through this. There might be something in here to put on the board.
Okay.
When you start, when you, like, after you've got the idea, right, and you're starting to, you've come up with the idea for the adventure, but now you got to start actually writing stuff down so it is real and you can actually use it when you sit down to play. I remember sort of, I don't remember exactly the context or how he said this, but there was a Matt Colville video about running published adventure modules a while ago on YouTube where he said that he always, like, there's a thing that he looks for when he picks up one of these, like, old dungeon zines or whatever. And it's often not well presented. It's sometimes, like, hidden at the back or hidden, you know, after some fluff in the beginning or something. But, like, somewhere there's a page that says, like, this is what's happening. This summary that is, like, it's not written as an in-universe document. It's not written as something to present to the players. It's written for you or for the game master using it in the case of a published module. And I think if you're sitting down to start writing an adventure, if you're coming up with a fun idea and you're like, I need to write this down so I can actually use it, this is kind of like what I'm talking about when I say draw the box around it. Like, you should have a half page where you just write, like, this is where we are, this is the situation, and these are the things that are going on, and it will lead to this, right? And that should be concise, right? It should be, you know, it should be tight and quick, and it should be something you can always go back to. Because if you have a good, like, two or three paragraphs that describe the entire adventure with its boundaries, like, it's set here and it doesn't extend beyond this, and these are the things, these are the people in it, and these are the things that's happening. You know, what is the thing? The conflict, right? At the heart of it.
Mm-hmm.
Write that down in a small, you know, really easy to reference thing. And then out of that, I feel like springs a bunch of other stuff. Out of that, once you have that written down, well, then the prompt that you give your players about what is the right sort of character to make for this adventure, it springs out of there somewhere because you've written down what it is. And so it makes sense for this sort of character. So then the next page where you write, like, this is the information for players. This is what players know. This is the guide for creating your characters for this. It should come out of that neat little summary of what the adventure is. And that neat little summary is not something you share with your players, but you have it.
Well, yeah, what you're talking about is an abstract.
Yeah.
And I think that was an abstract.
Yes.
And we were dancing around it, so thanks for just coming out and saying it, because for some reason I couldn't get there. A summary of what the deal is behind the scenes of, like, here's the big bad's plan. And here's how it can be stopped.
Right.
And that's it. Just that 2-3 paragraphs.
Because when you're writing an adventure, that, what you just, like, the big bad's plan. That's the big, this is the big bad's plan. You're going to be hiding that information in the encounters. You're going to be like, how, I want to give them a little taste of it so that they think to go look over here. But, like, you should have it written out plainly over here at the beginning for you.
And having that written out plainly will help when your players are like, because they don't understand what's happening because you're not going to give that to them. And so they're going to do something that, like, regardless of how big your outline is and, like, oh, I've prepared for every scenario, you haven't because you can't.
Yeah.
And so they're going to do something, and instead of saying, oh, well, no, you just can't do that, if you know where it's going and, like, you have that abstract, you can be like, oh, okay, well, that actually kind of connects to this bit in the abstract of, like, the big bag's plan. So, like, now let my players run with it, and, like, that's going to, you know, fill in for this thing, you know, in my outline. It's like, that counts as that. because it gets to the same goal, or, you know, it disrupts the same part of the big bad's plan. Not necessarily in the way that I thought would be the most obvious thing, right? Because when I wrote this, it's like, oh, it's so obvious that you gotta kill the wizard in the first town. Hmm. But maybe they make friends with the wizard in the first town. And it's like, okay, well, maybe they just make such good friends that the wizard in the first town is on their team now. And that's just as important as killing the big bad, or the wizard, right? Because the big bad was going to use them to do something. Hmm. But now they can't, because the wizard is friends with the team, the players. So, have that on the board as good adventure writing technique is write yourself an abstract.
Write the abstract.
I would say it doesn't have to come first. I think you could do a lot of outline prep.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I made it sound like you should write that first. Outlines, a word cloud, all the just like, you know, do the fun creative preparatory stuff. But then when you start to zero in on it, you're like, okay, this is the adventure.
Right. Or maybe you get a little stuck. I think that's also a great way mm-hmm. to get unstuck.
Is can you write an abstract mm-hmm. of it? And a good abstract, then a lot of things will spring from that. You'll know, like, okay, I need a list of enemies. It needs to include this stuff. This is the big bad. These are the guys who work for him. They should have some minions. A lot of the rest of the stuff will write itself for you. I mean, you'll still have to type it, but it'll spring from the abstract into your brain fully formed, and you'll be like, yes, that's it. And then you're just like writing a little list of these enemies, and maybe putting a little like sub bullet under them about where they go or whatever.
A little bit of a digression, but since we brought up enemies, for a adventure, what do you think the best practice is for enemies? 'Cause like in the adventure, there's going to be a lot of, you can run into a lot of different enemies, right? So like town guards versus soldiers, or, you know, several types of monsters, and like writing those out and like having all the stats. And then like, sure, there's probably going to be some specific bits in the outline where it's like, you know, this door is guarded by this many guards.
Yeah.
But like in terms of just like trying to cut down on the busy work of trying to make a lot of unique and creative enemies, what do you think, like, some general stat blocks, and then kind of just, like, mod them as appropriate to fit the situation in the adventure? Or, like, should you really go, okay, these guards, these guards, these guards, soldiers are here, in the forest there's, like, werewolves and tigers and bears. How rich is your, like, enemy appendix?
Well, appendix, interesting that you use that word. What I like to do, my best practice is to have that, like, to do an appendix, to have like a separate page. And I like to have that list be, you know, not the whole monster manual, for lack of a better term. You know, we don't run 5e or use the monster manual, but like when I'm writing out an adventure, what I have previously done is like little location descriptions in whatever order that goes. It's hard to organize a list of location descriptions and have them like map onto a map in a way that makes sense. Like, they don't go in the same place, but, you know, numbered or by name or whatever. Location descriptions, and then what I like to do, what I've previously done, is a sub-bullet under the little paragraph about the location with the handful of enemies that might be there, and then have the enemy information be on a separate page, or you know, an appendix. Like, these are the two pages with all the bad guys that could be in this adventure. And that's where I put stat blocks and stuff. I don't like the way I've seen in, like, a couple of the zines we have where in, like, two column text on a page, there will be, this is the encounter, and then, you know, in the text somewhere where it says, like, you know, troll appears or whatever, mm-hmm. and describe, like, the situation in which you encounter the troll, and then there's the troll stat block in that. I don't like organizing that way. I like to have all my enemy information in one place.
Yeah, because that's a very common way to do it, and when I run a pre-written module, it's always... Well, my players didn't come upon the troll that way. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't know the troll was there. But, like, you know, they're players and they've read a book before. So they're like, we're going to sneak around back at nighttime. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, so, like, the book says the troll is awake and, you know, feasting on the corpses in the barn. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's like, well, they didn't immediately go into the barn when they found the barn, so now it's nighttime, so is the troll still eating corpses? I gotta make a decision there.
Yeah.
But then also, maybe they just completely skip the barn, go through, like, the town, fight this other, you know, fight the little pack of goblins, and then go back to the barn. And, well, what if their fight with the goblins made a lot of noise? Does the troll come out of the barn? Now I have to flip back and find the troll stats, and, like, mm-hmm. you know. So, I agree. I think for the way I run things, it's a lot easier if I just know where all the enemy stat blocks are and when it's appropriate to, like, bring in an enemy or the players face enemies instead of, like, rereading and being like, what section of the book was that? Mm-hmm. Just to be like, oh, they're all in the back. Here it is. Troll.
Yeah. That's... I mean, it's hitting on a broader thing that I've tried to do, and I still haven't figured this out, because when I wrote out the booklet for the Brackenwald, the Cursed Forest adventure that we did for the lock-in, I still ended up duplicating some information in a way that was irritating to me, but I was like, ah, fuck. It's still worth mentioning this here. And so my little booklet that I had for myself, I had... you know, what we were talking about a little bit ago, the abstract idea. Like, I knew what the adventure was. I knew what the central tension was, and had we had done session zero, talked about, like, why you would be here, and then we got into it, cool. And then I had a map, and I had the map. There were, like, specific regions of the map, and each one of those little regions in my little notes had a little paragraph about what this region is in terms of the wider forest. And then I had a little blurb about what the central tension in that area was, because there was a lot of little sub-central tensions. Mm-hmm. And that included, like, what factions are at play here. And then also a second little sub-bullet about possible enemies you may encounter. But then I ended up rewriting some stuff, because in the description of some of those locations, like in the Beastwood area, which was the first sort of, like, region of the forest that you guys passed through, there was two things going on. There was all the mutant beastmen, who were the sort of, like, native faction of enemies that you were going to encounter. And then there was a crusade of knights and soldiers from outside the forest who were also in there. And then I ended up having to duplicate some text about that, because I, in another page of my notes, I had, like, these are the six major factions in here. So I repeated information from location descriptions when I gave myself, when I wrote the notes about the separate factions. I ended up repeating some of the stuff from what region they were in. And I didn't like that. That bugged me that that there were some things that I had written twice, even though it was just for myself and not, you know, not fit for public consumption anyway. But I wanted it, I was trying to achieve a little bit more elegance through that. And then I never had in my notes about regions or specific encounters that I wanted to happen. I never had like in-depth stuff about the enemies. I put that towards the back of the book. And so I would always just go to the back of the little booklet for once we were in an encounter, especially a combat encounter, I didn't need faction information or location information anymore. I would just go to the last two pages where I had information about enemies and NPCs. And so organizationally, I liked that. Like starting with the abstract, which is where I got the information for the like session zero character creation prompt stuff. And then it was organized by location because it was an exploration focused adventure. Each location had stuff about the factions that were at play there, the central tension in that area, and then bullet about enemies. Then I repeated information about factions and major NPCs associated with those factions. And that was another thing that bugged me, is because some major NPCs were also enemies and had to be... So they were written in two different spaces, in two different contexts. One, like, this is, you know... Lord Wolfborg, and it's his crusade, and that's his, like, relation, his involvement in the political situation here, and then another entry for this character as an enemy stat block. Repeated. So that bugged me a little bit, repeating that information, but it made the most sense to me to organize it that way.
Second part of that question that is gone, that we haven't answered yet, and then it's going to lead into to something else. So for enemies, having them all written out, so like having town guard versus soldier, like they're pretty much the same except for like maybe soldiers are a little bit tougher when they're soldiers, but like what is really the difference, right?
Yeah. So like, especially depending on the system you're using.
Would you have two different stat blocks, or would it kind of be like, here's like the base stat block and like town guards are a little bit easier, so like minus two to all their stats or whatever. Versus, yeah, having like three different stat blocks for essentially the same enemy. And then what, like, would you ever randomly make, or not randomly, would you ever create an enemy on the spot, or just over prepare your enemy list so that way you always have something, a stat block already created?
My preference and my advice to anybody would be to not over prepare and not, well, answer to the first part. No to separate specific stat blocks for any of them. I would have taken just both, you know, soldiers and town guards and just like put them in a sort of like minion category, basically. And I like to have four or five categories of enemy.
Right. So minions would be the stat block, and then you just reskin it to fit the the context. So like a minion could be a town guard. It could be just like a beastman soldier you meet in the woods. It could be a goblin ambusher.
Yeah.
It could be end of list.
That's my preference, because then what I can do is, one, my my page that has enemies that I might need, I can fit that in as little paper as possible. I can have, you know, like off to the side or in one corner of the page, I can have like a little table of like, these are the five tiers of enemies, basically. And here's the basic stat block, which is easy to modify because of the systems that we tend to gravitate towards, which are rules light, low math, simplified stat blocks for the most part. And then my things about the enemies can be more descriptive and less stat focused. So then, you know, I might still have separate entries for town guard versus soldier, mm-hmm. right? But I know that it's probably the minion stat that I'm going to use, stat block that I'm going to use for both of them. But a little note about, like, where you would find town guards and what the difference is between them. And that, like, you know, town guards are going to run away from a stand-up fight, whereas soldiers are going to, like, form up and call for reinforcements. And mm-hmm. then I describe those encounters and play them in combat encounter differently, while, like, minimizing the amount of notes that I need. And
yeah. What about weapons and loot? So, oh, like, minion...
That's been tricky.
Right? Because I've also been thinking about that. And, like, that's one thing that I don't really like about that Star Wars module that I'm running, is it has all their gear listed out. So when somebody says, I loot the body, it's like, okay, well, I do actually have that list.
Fuck, it's written down.
So, like, here you go. And then, you know, what... Mm-hmm. ends up happening with one of our players is like, well, I'm just gonna, yo, now I have a big arm of weapons. Mm. And you're like, why? You're never gonna use all of those.
Yeah.
You never use the only weapon you use is the one you statted out min-max to use, so why are you picking that up? But like, hey, you know, they enjoy adding it to their inventory. Okay.
It's a weird thing, and it doesn't help with the conversation we're having right now about adventure.
Well, writing. I was about to bring it back.
Okay. I just, like, it's a weird player psychology thing, and I think it comes from video games
yeah.
where, you know, that stuff is... People just do that, right? Mm-hmm. They collect everything. And then long past the point, you know, in a Fallout game where, you don't need any more pipe pistols. Like, yeah, but if I'm not totally encumbered, I can dump them in my crafting bench and I'll get, like, a screw out of each one.
Yeah.
Or probably not. A screw's an advanced crafting component. Whatever. Doesn't matter. But what I've personally as a player happened into is this... The philosophy that I try to embody when I roleplay is that, like, this is my guy's sword or my guy's gun. And even if there's a bunch more lying around, like, I don't want those. Because one, it would suck to carry them all in real life. And two, this is the one I'm comfortable with, so I want to keep the one that is mine. And that's how I try to play, but a lot of players do not play that way. A lot of players load their inventory up.
I think two things. Well, three things. One for the board. I think we should put it on the board and... You know, it would be a great thing if other people agreed with us and started doing this. Of, as a player, when you finish the combat, say, is there anything useful on the bodies?
Yeah.
And then leave it up to the game master to be like, yes, here's what there is. Or no, just like what they were carrying, which is junk, you don't want to pick it up.
Yeah.
So, want to put that on the board. I think the like... habit and like compulsion to do that in a tabletop role-playing game is like having just a bunch of shit that like you can look at and get an idea from mm-hmm. of like, oh, we came to an obstacle in our road, let me check my inventory. Oh, can I like craft like a grappling hook out of like rope and dynamite? You know, it's like, okay, well, I guess you could roll for it, right? And then it's like, okay, that makes this easier because I just picked everything up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, yeah, put it on the board. Let's get away from that compulsion because I don't like it. And then bring it back to the adventure writing. Because that compulsion exists and, like, the idea of being prepared or over preparing or not being prepared enough, where do you have that line of like, here's what the minions are carrying, and like some are carrying rope, and like because rope could be useful down the line and like, you know, shopping opportunities in the adventure, and like, oh, does anybody have a light source? Well, you might want to pick one up next time or something like that. What are your thoughts on writing that?
My thoughts and my personal standard operating procedure, I guess, is to not write that stuff. Because as soon as you write it out for one encounter or like one group of enemies, then you got to come up with an organizational system to write it for everything. And that sucks. And, you know, then you end up with a booklet with a lot of information to just page through. And I personally hate that. And if I were to run something that someone else had written, I would just, like, my eyes would glass over that stuff. And I'd probably end up missing some things because maybe they put important stuff there. So if, like, if there's a magic item or a, like, mission critical item, I make a note of that in my little like notes about enemy descriptions. Especially if it's a named enemy, I'll be like, well, he's carrying these things, right? A mini boss or a major boss. Maybe his sword is cool. His sword is better than yours. You might want to pick that up if you beat him. That makes sense. Make a little note about that. As far as like useful stuff that I might not have thought of, like, you know, rope, like the players don't have rope, but rope would be helpful, could be helpful later down the line. And I think like, that's what I'm on the lookout for. What I like to encourage and what we've done before in some of our adventures and sessions is like, well, you tell me what you're looking for. I like that. You tell me what you're looking for. And then I'll think if it makes sense for it to be here or not, and I'll say no, they don't, you didn't find that, none of these guys were carrying that, or they did because it does make sense, or the in between is I'll ask for a roll, I'll let the dice decide. We're like, yeah, maybe this guy, maybe you, like, you know, you ran into some bandits and you had a fight with them, you killed them, and you just thought like, hey, it'd be useful, you know, it'd be useful if we had some rope or a lantern, something we don't have. Do these bandits have one of those? Like, maybe they also thought the same thing, and so one of them is carrying it, but maybe not, and I'll leave that up to like a luck roll or something. As opposed to going into my notes and finding a list of what is being carried.
Okay, so that is kind of the opposite of, do I find anything useful, Game Master? It is, do I find this specific item?
Yeah.
I think they're both of the same vein of either I'll tell you what you find that could be useful later, or you ask for a very specific item because you already have an idea for it.
Mm-hmm.
Neither are that middle ground of, I just want to pick up the junk, so tell me what they're carrying.
Right. And I think both of us are in agreement that we don't really like that. Like, tell me everything they're carrying because I want to pick up all the junk until I'm out of inventory space.
Yeah.
You just, like, if we're talking about writing an adventure, which is what this episode is about, that's a lot of writing that you can go ahead and just save yourself. Because there are a couple different ways to approach it where you don't have to have every possible enemy and NPC written out, listed with the stuff that they have on their person.
I think that the answer to that question, now that we've discussed it, is because you have a tight little abstract, you will know what is useful or not useful, or like, you know, an idea that your players have, like, you know if that's going to go somewhere or not. And you don't have to you don't have to create something new and then accidentally, like, you know, overpower it or, you know, completely misdirect your players or whatever. Because, like, oh, they had a good idea and I want to reward that, but I don't have that written down on my stuff. But, like, let's see where this goes. You already know where it goes because you have a tight little abstract. So you don't need an exhaustive list of gear items that the minions are carrying. You don't need an exhaustive list of every minion you're going to run into.
Mm-hmm.
And like, to make it interesting, ooh, each minion has individual randomized stats because, like, fun, you don't really need that because you have the full context and, like, the abstract.
Yeah.
And so you can come up with fun context. You don't have to come up with fun stats. Because I think that's one of my hardest habits to break when writing stuff is, like, I always try to make each combat unique and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you don't really need to. You make it unique and interesting with context. You don't need stats that, that show that. You can just have monster in the woods stats, and then with context, you can kind of just alter it on the fly for a unique encounter.
Because that same little line of text that describes monster in the woods with, you know, whatever stats you need for whatever game you're playing, like, it's a different encounter if they sneak up on the monster. It's a different encounter if the monster jumps out at them and surprises them. It's a different encounter if they realize that the monster is hunting them and, like, you know, stalking them through the woods. And it's also a different encounter if it's, like, by the river or in a clearing or in really dense wood where it's hard to move. That's, like, 9 different encounters. More, whatever, permutations. With minimal, minimal descriptive text on your part. So you won't have to go back and look at as many notes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we solved it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we got some stuff.
Everybody should be a master writer, master beta writer.
I think a couple things. I mean, we don't have the outline to recap how we normally do, but, like, having an abstract, that's good. A lot of your stuff will come from that. It doesn't have to be the first thing you write. It can come from, you know, a little bit of brainstorming and outline writing first, but then once you have a good abstract, a lot of the other stuff, like, you'll know, do I need location descriptions? What other, you know, you'll know the descriptions that you need and you'll have some idea of how to organize it. You'll also have good information to give your players to, you know, point them in the right direction of making characters that belong in this adventure. And then, I mean, we're basically saying it, right? Like, don't try and do a Skyrim where every NPC has, where the game knows a list of everything that's in their pockets, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple other ways to do it where you don't have to do that. And basically, we wholeheartedly recommend don't do that.
Is that gonna do it?
I think that's about do it. I'm trying to think if there's anything else like hot and actionable that goes on the board or worth recapping. I think that's about it. You know, we're just sitting here talking about writing adventures, thinking about adventure writing. Okay. Well, yeah. If that'll about do it, but you still want more, head over to the 2HGM Patreon. I thought it was still broken, but we figured it out. You can just follow us for free. That's allowed. It's a little hidden, stupid, but that's where all our stuff is now. And nothing on our Patreon is behind a paywall, but if you feel like paying us, you can. That option is there. That's what Patreon is more properly for. But we're using that instead of a website now because old school websites are dead. About it. I'm not quite sure when this episode airs, but
tomorrow.
Oh. Okay. I thought we were maybe a little ahead of the game, but then I realized, nope, not. So it's August. That's not too early. Keep an eye out for our Halloween adventure. That's coming up. And if you want to have anything to do with that, if you've listened to our show before and, you know, think those are fun, get on Patreon, get on our Discord, and, you know, you might be able to get involved with it a little bit. Could be fun. Thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pond Hill's Finest as the intro and outro to our show. And we'll see y'all next time.